started counterculture yesterday, and I operated from, this has been happening to me all day, I just got too much stuff here, and here we go, operated mostly from this. I did not get yesterday's lecture in three parts posted until this morning. Had some a few glitches, so you know, if you were looking for that last night, well, it was nowhere to be found, but it is there. So if you feel like you want to catch the first half of everything about the counterculture era, then well, it's there for you to do at some time. So I started off with general statements, as always. The big thing here is that the counterculture era is the most difficult to describe. Yesterday, I said, well, critical period. What's the critical period? The critical period is that time during which the United States was operating under the Articles of Confederation. In fact, it's very precise, from 1781 to 1789. How about Reconstruction? Reconstruction is the post-Civil War period during which the northern states and the former states of secession will attempt reunification politically, socially, economically. Done. That's tough to do with the counterculture era. Number two, the shift from the 50s, conformist 50s, the airport walkway 50s, don't rock the boat, to the 60s represents, my opinion, represents the most difficult shift in American history from one sort of era to the next. I mean, it's not like this. It's not like, well, you know, we can somehow make this thing fit. It's like this. It's not even close. And so that snowballs throughout the 60s. Much like the bare metal snowballed during the Gilded Age. And so the 1960s, as they roll on, and then into the early 70s, that's the counterculture era, the hippies, it just gets more and more chaotic. All right. Talked about all of this yesterday. All right. But that's all of that you get today. And then, if you go to the next page, you will see, the next three pages then, three presidents of the progressive era. Kennedy, Johnson, that's Lyndon Johnson, and Nixon. We covered Kennedy yesterday. I forgot to make one statement about Kennedy. Yes, dear?
It's the counterculture era, not the progressive era.
Thank you. Three presidents of the counterculture era, and I forgot to mention something about Kennedy yesterday. Not that it's earth-shaking. In fact, it's something that you already know, I think. But it's just something I've always mentioned, and so I'm going to. In terms of his election and then his inaugural address, I'm not a big Kennedy fan, but over the past few years, he's grown on me a little bit. I mean, I'm more attracted to Kennedy now than I was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. All right. But even so, I think Kennedy had perhaps the greatest one-sentence statement in an inaugural address of any inaugural address. And you know what it is. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. It takes, you know, some teamwork. And it's not all about what somebody can do for me all the time, what the government can do for me all the time. So it implies, well, maybe more than implies, there's got to be a collective effort and in order to create success. All right. So I really resonate with that line of thinking with Kennedy, and I just and what a gorgeous way of saying it. All right. So I forgot to mention that yesterday. Thought I would toss that out today. And yeah, we got through the whole Kennedy business yesterday. So on to Johnson then. My favorite president, my all-time favorite president. I said this yesterday, I recognize that with all of my historical favorites, Alexander Hamilton, George Custer, that they certainly had flaws and shortcomings and successes and failures within their profession. I understand that. All right. I'm not about to try to convince you that even though Johnson's my favorite president, that, you know, he was a Washington or a Lincoln. I mean, he wasn't. Okay. The gap between Johnson's success and his failure is as huge as with any president. So I'm just thinking back to, I don't know, John Adams. Remember, we identified with John Adams, seems like maybe last week, but it was more than that. At least it seems like last week to me. Remember with John Adams? Two big events during his administration. We could say three, we could even say four, but two big events during his administration. One represented his high point, one represented his low point. And he went from one right into the other, like, you know, within 15 minutes. Anybody remember those? High point of the Adams administration. The high point of the Adams administration was the XYZ affair. Remember, as a result of that, he could have had war with France, and it would have been very, very popular. But wisely, he avoided war. Low point of his administration, which comes on the heels of the XYZ affair, Alien and Sedition Acts, that political attempt by the Federalists to keep the Democratic Republicans in check. Johnson. High point was his high society, his Great Society program, which I talked about yesterday. The greatest outpouring of domestic legislature since the New Deal of Roosevelt. It addressed, I've got it right here, it addressed just about any topic you want to think of in terms of improving the United States internally. I didn't say that it was highly successful in every one of those areas. I mean, that's... You would guess, well, no. But nevertheless, it addressed. And then his low point, of course, was the Vietnam War, and you'll get that in full tomorrow. A huge gap. So with Johnson, there's a lot of people out there who wonder, when they find out that Johnson's my favorite president, they just, you know, shake their head, because Johnson is the president we associate most with the Vietnam War. And I know I've especially run into, what would be the right word?
Special.
Disapproval, I guess, when I share that with somebody who has a pretty direct connection with the Vietnam War. If you have a direct connection with the Vietnam War, I don't mean you. If you have a direct connection with the Vietnam War, you had to fight over there, or... even worse, you lost a husband or a brother there, then you don't have a good thing to say about Johnson. And, you know, I could certainly understand that. All right. Yeah. Done with Johnson yesterday. Okay. On to Nixon then. So I've given each of the presidents a title. And this is where I left off yesterday. So this is all new. So we'll slow it down at this point. So Richard Nixon, the third of three presidents of the counterculture era, and I've got a title for each one of them. I did that with a lot of the presidents, not all of them, through the year. And this one I created myself, the Wicked Witch of the West, Nixon from California. So, you know, the West, but it just works out just beautifully. Nixon was calculated, very rehearsed, very stiff, and, well, clearly unprincipled. And I'm thinking, what other president fits this description? Although has not gone down in history as the presidential devil that equals Nixon. What other president did we describe as cold and calculated, all business, rehearsed, stiff? If you're going to have lunch with, you know, choose a president to have lunch with, he's not the one because you're not going to enjoy it.
George Washington? No.
No.
He wasn't unprincipled.
Yes, you're correct. He was not unprincipled. Although, by our standards today, we describe Washington as regal. So, yeah, he would have been, by our standards today, he would have been a little bit stiff. Take it to the next step. Cold, calculated, all about business. And then, as far as the unprincipled business, could argue that he was unprincipled with regard to a particular war. That would be James K. Polk. So Polk, remember, baited Mexico into the war, Mexican-American War, so that the United States, upon victory, could claim a whole bunch of territory. All right. Nixon is the flip of Johnson. So Johnson gets an F in foreign affairs. It's not even an F plus. It's an F. Vietnam. Here at home, he gets an A. Great society. If all of that stuff could have happened, a lot of it did, if all of it could have happened, I mean, we'd be living in Shangri-La right now. Nixon is a flip. So, domestically, Watergate. He betrays the nation like no other president ever has. In terms of foreign affairs, so we go from my favorite president to the president I despise the most. But I tell it like it is. And it is true that Nixon had a certain knack for foreign affairs. If you could do with one president Nixon's knack for foreign affairs with Johnson's great society, if you could put those two together, wow, you'd have a president greater than probably Washington or Lincoln or Roosevelt. All right. So, in terms of foreign affairs, one big event, right? Well, that's the Cold War. And we've gone through that. So you can see there what is some review regarding the Cold War. A name to remember. I'm not sure I pointed this out with the Cold War. I mean, maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger was, for Nixon, National Security Advisor, and then later on, Secretary of State. I believe Kissinger is still alive. He has a what most people think is a German accent, pretty heavy German accent. It's actually Austrian. But at any rate, he was considered, well, a pretty darn good Secretary of State. And I mean, you would guess that because I just told you that Nixon had a knack for foreign affairs. Well, he's going to get a little bit of a boost from his Secretary of State. In fact, Kissinger often appeared on television programs after his time with the government was done, as just sort of regarding big issues like Face the Nation or, you know, some of those sorts of programs. All right. And then the other big issue with Nixon, which really isn't an other big issue, it's sort of a sub-issue of the Cold War, is the Vietnam War. And I've got some stuff there, but you get that tomorrow. Okay, domestic issues then. Nixon is faced with inflation, and how many times have I said this about the economy? There's no ABCs to solve economic issues. So he's going to struggle with that. And then in 1973, the United States experiences an embargo on petroleum. You know, our source for a lot of petroleum, did I say that right? Yeah, I said that right, is the Arab countries. And so our supply is cut. We're not getting along with the Arab countries. So that's an easy economic weapon for the Arab countries to use against the United States. And so I lived this. I told the Blue Bloc yesterday that for the first time, well, a little, the Cold War, I guess, but for the first time, I'm telling you about stuff that I lived. Some of you think, well, Tubbs probably lived some of the, you know, Manifest Destiny and Civil War, but I didn't, all right? But I did live this. So, get this. 55-mile-per-hour speed limit imposed on the interstates. So, in case you don't know, the speed limit now on I-90 between Rapid City and Sioux Falls is 80. Try next time you're doing that, or even with your parents, say, hey, you know, just when you're out in the middle of nowhere, go 55 miles an hour for the next 10 minutes. And you will think that you're just going through your neighborhood at 15 miles an hour. Do the math there. That means a trip from Rapid City to Sioux Falls, because, you know, you got to stop for gas once, bathroom once, maybe McDonald's once. That makes it like a 7-hour trip. It was excruciating. But we all had to deal with it. And I remember doing that. So guess what became really popular in that period? A device called a fuzz buster. So do you know that? I haven't heard it lately. I mean, I don't know.
Is it a radar detector?
Yeah, exactly. So the police used to be called the fuzz. That was a term.
Hot fuzz.
The term that originated in the counterculture, the fuzz. And so these radar detectors were called fuzz busters. And you could buy them, and then you just plug them into the cigarette lighter for the power source, and then you put them on the dash. And then the idea was they would detect a few miles out when the highway patrol is sitting there with their radar gun, and then, well, then you just slow down. And they were really pretty reliable. Some were better than others. But anyway, it seems like everybody had one of those. I had one of those. And so fuzzbusters. Yeah, and now I don't even know if you could buy one nowadays. Yeah. I don't know. In some states, they actually became illegal. So anyway. And then the Alaskan pipeline was a big issue at the time, an energy issue and an environmental issue. So Alaska's rich in petroleum. Alaska belongs to the United States. It's a state by now. So we'll build this Alaska pipeline and so we can get some of that petroleum. Well, of course, the environmentalists are going to be all over that, and, you know, understandably. So then we have the Watergate scandal, and yeah, okay, here we go with Watergate. So pink handout, I think. No, was it pink? Yeah, pink handout that I gave you yesterday. And let's see how we do.
First of all, I'll check my time. I bet I'm not up to 30 minutes yet, though. No, okay.
So we'll get a little bit of Watergate on here, and then I'll have to start and stop. All right.
Mr. Tubbs?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to have that in key?
Yeah.
Because we do not.
Oh, okay.
We don't.
I got it for you, then.
Like,
yeah, that makes sense. You would not have that yet.
That's
yeah. Well, then I might as well stop this for a minute.